Why Danny Dalton believes he should be the next senator from the state of Maine. Danny Dalton, a former federal drug agent and intelligence advisor with the Department of Defense, is one of four independent candidates vying for the U.S. Senate seat being vacated by the retiring Olympia Snowe. Dalton says the U.S. Senate has failed to provide proper oversight of federal agencies, and it's one of the reasons he chose to enter the race. Dalton says if elected, he has the expertise to identify waste and mismanagement in government and would help to streamline agencies to be more effective and efficient. I'm Keith Shortall. Today we continue our series of Your Vote 2012 candidate interviews with Danny Dalton. Join the conversation. Email talk at mpbn.net, post to our Facebook page, tweet at Maine Calling, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. A conversation with Danny Dalton, independent for U.S. Senate. This is Maine Calling.
Your Vote 2012 election coverage is made possible by MPBN radio listener contributions and by Lambert Coffin, celebrating 25 years of delivering strategic legal counsel on issues and opportunities in Maine with offices in Portland and Blue Hill, by AARP Maine, working to protect Social Security and Medicare, more information online at aarp.org/me, and by Garand Marketing and Communications, serving clients here and abroad with offices in Portland, Maine. The happiest people in business, Garand.com.
And Danny Dalton, welcome to Maine Calling.
Thank you so much, Keith. Thank you very much for having me here today.
As we mentioned at the top, you're one of four independents running for this seat. There are six candidates in all. What are the other five candidates in the race not talking about that you're talking about?
Well, it's not so much that the other candidates aren't talking about it. It's the media is not reporting on what they're talking about, all the candidates. I think part of the problem here is I think there are basically four problems with our political system and what is not happening during this Senate race. Number one, we have two dysfunctional political parties that are being controlled by special interests, big money, and major lobbyists. And then we have a placating mainstream media that doesn't pay attention to the other issues that are going on. Everyone knows that the two parties are broken, and that's part of the reason we have so many independents running for Senate right now. So for the mainstream media not to be paying attention to the other candidates when everybody pretty much wants to change our political system and the two parties in a way they're not operating, I think that's erroneous. And also on a third part of that whole problem, we have a constituency that isn't paying attention to what the other candidates are talking about and demanding from our mainstream media that we hear more from them and what their issues are.
You and I saw on your website you sort of repeat this criticism of media, but I would say that you know when you're left off of the platform of these debates all over the state, I've noticed, for example, in our coverage of recent quote unquote debates, they invite they invite Cynthia Dill, Angus King, and Charlie Summers, the other three independents. Are not invited, and those are community organizations that are making that call. Is it the media's fault, or is it everybody's fault for not including all six candidates in this discussion?
Well, like I said, the media can be forced to force the hands of the other players involved in changing our political system. The media is supposed to be the watchdogs of our society, making sure that everyone knows what the issues are in depth. Making sure that we're safe and secure and that we're not being controlled by major lobbyists like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, who undermines things such as our health care reform or immigration reform. I think there's more than one entity that's involved here in this dysfunctional system. I agree with that. I just think that mainstream media plays such an important part in all this that we have to direct attention to them.
I'm guessing that you have complained to those debate organizers for not being invited.
Well, basically, I went – like the first debate was in Lewiston. So since I wasn't invited, I went to Lewiston and I handed out brochures at the beginning of the event to people that were going inside. Afterwards, I discussed the issue with the three candidates themselves who basically said, well, it wasn't up to them to organize – the event. But what this is about isn't about winning. This is about making sure that our constituency has as much information as possible to make a wise decision when they pick their next senator, and to make sure that the other Senate candidates know about the issues. Now, when I had the debate at the Women's Forum the other day, and I was talking to Angus King, and he said, "Well, I didn't really realize that you had such a strong background in your areas. I should give you a call later." That's nice to hear that, and I think it's important for everybody to share this information so that it can get out there, because it's basically squash, and that's why we have things such as WikiLeaks and things like that, because people become frustrated trying to get their information out, and you can't get it out.
So when you say it's not about winning, are you in this to win the Senate race or to bring attention to the issues that you think are being ignored in general?
When I say it's not about winning, the most important thing is we have changes in our system. Okay, if I won, that's great. The reason I did run for U.S. candidate, to be a U.S. candidate and possibly be our next U.S. senator, was because we're not being represented properly here in the state by our U.S. Senate senators, Senator Snow and Senator Collins. People praise them for different areas such as small business development and things like that. But when it comes to the security of our country, they're not doing their job. When I came back from Iraq and I was developing sources with the FBI counterterrorism group for Afghanistan, and they were so incompetent that they couldn't have a coordination between themselves and the ground forces in Afghanistan to pick up a Taliban commander out of a hospital in a major city in Afghanistan. That's incompetence. And when I go to my senators as a constituent of Maine, even though I've only been here for 3 years, but my kids have lived here for many years, and I have two granddaughters here, I want to be listened to, especially with my background. I think it's important. We just had a young man that was murdered by insurgents in Afghanistan not too long ago. His family, I'm sure, is grieving, family and friends, and I am for them too. And I think everyone expects and wants our representatives to do everything they can to make sure that that doesn't happen. Well, when I go to my senators and I complain to their staff, but I can't meet with my senators regarding information like that, then I think that's wrong. They make an oath. They have an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against foreign and domestic. When someone with my background comes up, I think you should at least pay attention to them.
But are you concerned that, I mean, it seems like the focus in this race has really been on issues that directly affect, Maine consumers. And we're talking about jobs and the economy and all of that. That's been the front burner issue as opposed to.
Yes, I understand. But the problem here, Keith, is that there's basically four things our government should be doing. One is security and safety of our country. The next thing is to provide a vibrant economy through infrastructure development and proper regulations, and then have a healthy society, an educated society, and make sure that we have the revenue to do all those things, right? Well, when we're wasting billions and billions and billions of dollars on all these different agencies that I worked for, probably over 50% of discretionary income from all the different agencies I worked for. I worked with the CIA, worked the Department, blah, 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 blah.
Well, let's...
Okay, so then they're therefore all that waste that isn't being directed at when we have the two parties not even concentrating and asking the tough questions about our Department of Defense, about why can't we win a war, but we want to continue to spend $700 billion on programs that can't win us a war. No one's asking those questions. When we want to talk about a Drug Enforcement Administration that spends $3 billion a year on their programs, but I'm in El Salvador with one other agent trying to stop cartels from taking over. And prior to that, I'm in Albany, New York, trying to find a kilo of cocaine. You're misallocating your resources like that. We need to pay attention. And guess what? The Senate's supposed to be confirming responsible leadership to run these agencies and their planned politics. Now, I worked for the Department of Homeland Security at their headquarters in 2010 and 2011 for a Law Enforcement Information Sharing Initiative director underneath the Napolitano, helping them write policies on treaties with visa waiver countries, sharing information. At the same time, I'm providing information to a dysfunctional FBI group that can't share information with our ground forces. That's disgusting.
We're kind of jumping around the road here on your background, but for those who aren't familiar with your background, you spent 9 years active duty in the U.S. Air Force and Army. additional 8 years in reserves and National Guard. You also, as you mentioned, worked as a special agent in the DEA. Can you talk about that?
Well, I just mentioned the fact that how incompetent the DEA has been over time. Okay, I spent 12 years in Pakistan, El Salvador, different parts of the country. I went to Pakistan before 9/11 and after 9/11. While we're talking about the problem in Libya, not providing security to the people that were murdered there in Benghazi, well, I can tell you it's a personal incident that happened to me. I'm in Peshawar, Pakistan, on the tribal area before 9/11. I get evacuated with my family. I come back in December of 2001, and I'm working with the CIA and different agencies providing information on the insurgents streaming down in from Afghanistan because we didn't have enough presence there to stop them. So they're running all over Pakistan now, and the ambassador, who is a single parent, Wendy Chamberlain, puts out a statement that they're going to bring back the families to Pakistan, and I'm complaining to the regional security office that all my reports indicate that all these insurgents are coming in and it's not safe. So I decide not to bring my family back, of course. And then guess what? In late February, I think beginning of March, they bring the families back. And within 2 weeks, a terrorist kills a father and a mother, a father and a daughter in a church with a grenade. And then they re-evacuate them. That's what's been happening. That's what continues to happen. We're not doing what we've been told we should be doing from these different investigations and different committees, such as developing our human sources after 9/11. That was the biggest issue, and I can tell you they're not doing it.
We'll get back to some of these issues that I know are important to you. I do want to talk about some of the sort of big issues in the race and what's on the minds of voters, and that is the economy. What is it that as U.S. Senator, you could do as part of the government to improve the jobs picture?
Well, first of all, what we need to do for our business community is ensure them that we are going to act on these problems that we have. And the two biggest problems are our deficit, okay, and the debt, and a tax reform policy. As I mentioned, I can address a lot of the waste, a lot of the mismanagement, a lot of the incompetence to make sure that we're not playing political games about things such as our defense. When we talk to people and tell people from the political side of the House that we can't cut back on our defense, that's untrue. Because, like I said, if we're going to spend $700 billion and we're not capable of winning a war, we should be asking the question, what's our military capable of doing? What programs aren't functioning properly? So for our business community to be able to address our debt problem, that's very important. And the way we're going to do that is through finding out where the waste is and mismanagement in our government. Things like Wall Street reform, okay, which we haven't really adequately addressed because too big to fail entities are bigger than they were before, and we haven't addressed the systemic risk that's still there concerning that problem. They're not talking about the resolutions to these issues. Okay, they want to talk about Wall Street reform. I really haven't heard the other candidates talk about Wall Street reform and what to do about it. And on my website, I do have what's on there. All these different issues that the other candidates are talking about. If you go to my website, daltonsenate.com, I give you so much more detail on how I would address it that it's really not even necessary to talk about it here.
If you would indulge me on you raised the tax question. Could you just talk a little bit about tax reform in the next whole minute that we have before the break?
Okay, I'm sorry, yeah. Okay, so tax reform, here's the deal on tax reform for me. The fundamental purpose of a tax system should be to efficiently collect taxes in a way that is equitable and minimally inhibits economic growth and domestic employment. Okay, so when we talk about raising tax and lowering taxes in this political ball game that they're doing, that's not the way to address this problem. And how can we induce a better economic situation here? And basically what the experts have said, which were the committee that Senator Hatch put together with Mr. Domenici and Alice Rivlin, they wanted the value-added tax. And the reason that they say we're not going to have a value-added tax is because there's not the political will in Congress to do that. It means that they don't have the backbone. If you look at my website and why the value-added tax is important, because what we're doing with the value-added tax, it's got to do with exports and imports and taxing and not taxing our exports.
Which you point out China employs.
150 countries employ it. Now, what China does is when they want to sell something to us, they have a value-added tax in their country. They apply 17% when you buy something in their country. When they export, they take that 17% off. So that comes into our country with a 17% discount. Now, when we send a product to China, we have a 35% corporate income tax that's applied. Many companies, large companies, have avoided that and put their profits offshore. We have $1 trillion of offshore profits from these big organizations. And realistically, they're only paying 7.9% corporate income tax. Okay.
All right. We're going to take your calls and questions in a moment. We're going to take a short break. We're talking today with Danny Dalton, candidate for U.S. Senate. Your comments, email talk@mpbn.net, tweet @MainCalling, post a comment on our Facebook page, or call 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
On the campaign trail, Joe Biden and Paul Ryan each have played the role of attack dog.
Governor Romney believes it's okay to raise taxes on middle class by $2,000.
The president is just throwing away money.
Now the vice presidential nominees will debate the issues face to face. I'm Audie Cornish. Tomorrow night, join us for special coverage of the vice presidential debate from NPR News.
Join us for Your Vote 2012 election coverage tomorrow evening live at 9 on both MPBN radio and television. Radio will rebroadcast the debate Friday afternoon at 1, and television will repeat the debate Sunday afternoon at 2:30.
Nate Silver is famous for his New York Times blog 538, where he analyzes the political polls and predicts election outcomes. On the next Fresh Air, Silver talks about the science of prediction as it applies to political polls, baseball, and poker. His new book is called The Signal and the Noise. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock. Your Vote 2012 election coverage is made possible by MPBN listeners and by Lambert Coffin, celebrating 25 years of delivering strategic legal counsel on issues and opportunities in Maine with offices in Portland and Blue Hill, by AARP Maine, working to protect Social Security and Medicare. More information online at aarp.org/ME. And by Garand Marketing and Communications, serving clients here and abroad from offices in Portland, Maine, the happiest people in business. Garand.com.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today, a Your Vote 2012 interview with Danny Dalton. He's running as an independent for the Senate seat that's being vacated by Olympia Snow. We'd like you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net. Tweet @MaineCalling or post to our Facebook page. Let's go to the phones now and to Peaks Island and Henry. Hi, Henry.
Hi. I had a question about Iran, and that is, would you favor bombing Iran if it were to appear on the edge of acquiring nuclear weapons? And if so, what would be achieved by such bombing, and how do you envision Iran responding to attacks by Israel or the United States?
Well, my answer to that question is I really don't know enough about our capabilities of destroying a possible nuclear facility, so I'd have to know more about that. And when these candidates talk about issues like that, none of them probably had a top-secret clearance or a secret clearance or know a lot about how the inner functions of these agencies work. Well, I will say one thing about Iran is that when I was in Iraq from 2006 to 2008, December, working at Department of Defense as an intel advisor during the surge 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, and I had a top secret clearance. Iran was killing our soldiers, and they were doing that through the Quds Force and different insurgents that they had planted. People that were being trained by our corporations that are subcontracted to train these people, just like they were doing that they're doing now in Afghanistan, killing our troops. But anyway, Iran's killing our troops through the EFPs, which are explosively formed projectiles. Iran was the only one that had these projectiles. They sent them into the Shia forces and through their Quds Force and different insurgents to kill our troops. Now, we didn't really pay attention to it then when they're killing our troops, so I think it's kind of disingenuous for everyone to be rattling sabers now.
Henry?
Do you think, then, since you think people don't know enough to say whether it would be useful to attack Iran in such circumstances, do you think, then, that the candidates who do advocate bombing if it appears that Iran is on the edge of acquiring nuclear weapons. Do you believe that such candidates don't know what they're talking about?
I don't think they have enough information to make that that decision. I don't think, unless somebody's telling Mr. Romney about our capabilities probably more than he should know at this point because he doesn't have a security clearance, then I'm not sure if he knows. And I know these other candidates that are talking here for the U.S. Senate debate don't know.
I want to bring it back home to some domestic issues. Healthcare. Do you support the Affordable Care Act?
The Affordable Care Act was undermined by several major lobbyist groups, one being the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, who's supporting the Republican platform. They worked with the health insurance companies to basically undermine parts of the health care reform, such as the public option. I think it's a step in the right direction. I thought the mandate was unconstitutional. I don't think Scalia would have been jumping up and down if it wasn't. But the Republicans had 2 years now to try to put something in its stead and haven't developed it. They had that opportunity. I think they lost it. It again shows a dysfunction of the two-party system.
You say on your website something a little bit stronger, though, which is the proper role of the federal government is to protect the citizens of the United States through an affordable national defense and healthcare system.
Absolutely.
You put them side by side.
Well, in the beginning of this program, I stated there's four things we need to be addressing as our government, and that's safety, business development, healthcare, and education. I don't think we provide an educational system. I don't think it's socialistic to make sure we have a healthy society.
To Medicare and Social Security, much is being made that they are becoming insolvent and we have to act now or they will disappear. You think that that's an exaggeration?
No, I don't think it's an exaggeration. I think everyone says we have to act now. The problem is we're not acting now. The more we put it off, the more of a problem it's going to become. Social Security isn't a huge problem. It's only 6.6% of our GDP. There's a technical solution to it that's not going to be that strenuous, although the people that are going to be paying for it is going to think so. Medicare is a huge problem. Medicare is a huge problem. Everybody knows it's a huge problem. How are we going to pay for it? We have to have the revenues to pay for it. And our current tax code isn't going to pay for it. It's like a piece of Swiss cheese with loopholes that the businesses are going to continue to try to undermine, and it's going to be very difficult for our Congress to come up with a plan where we get rid of these loopholes when all we have to do is have a value-added tax where I think it's 4% value-added tax will be a revenue-neutral solution to the problem.
Would you support means testing for either of those programs?
What do you mean by means
testing?
Well,
in other words, if someone is wealthy and doesn't need say, for example, assistance with Medicare but qualifies for it, or Social Security. They don't really need it. Should we test them to need in order to qualify for it?
Well, hopefully, if we have the right tax code, we don't have to worry about means testing. Again, it's trying to come up with a Band-Aid solution to these problems isn't the way to address it. First thing you need to do is to find out where the waste is. Make sure that you do the best you can to make our government agencies more streamlined and efficient and effective. I can tell you that all the ones I worked for, you could probably cut their budget in half. And if you effectively had good leadership, you would be more effective. And then the second thing is to have tax reform and have a tax code that addresses our businesses and our economy and our problems with things like corporate income tax.
Let's move on to energy. What can Congress do, if anything, to lower the cost of energy, or indeed is that its role?
Well, I think, like I stated before, our role is to have regulations that don't inhibit our business growth and to have the infrastructure. Now, I thought it was kind of telling at the last debate in Lewiston that I said I was sitting in the back row watching, and there's three items that came up, three questions that the candidates addressed. And one was asking about the energy and what our best solution for the future would be for energy. And Mr. Angus King stated that it would be natural gas. Now, I think that's kind of strange, since that we got a $100 million grant to develop wind energy programs in the state when the best solution is natural gas. And stated that it probably only be 80 cents as opposed to $44 to supply the fuel for our vehicles. So why don't we put in fueling stations for natural gas?
Do you support tax incentives for development of alternative forms, including wind?
Tax subsidies go across the board. We have Microsoft, other companies get tax subsidies. How you get around tax subsidies is by having a reform in the tax code. Again, I think the value-added tax would resolve a lot of those issues. It's fair. It's without loopholes. A lot of the experts think that's the way to go to make sure that we're globally effective in our businesses.
Do you support the expansion of nuclear power?
No. I know some people think it's safer now, but I don't know. I guess they haven't been paying attention to Japan.
Let's go back to the phones to Bangor and Susan. Hi, Susan. Welcome to Maine Calling.
Thank you. I have a question for the candidate.
Susan, we can't hear you. Can you speak up?
Can you hear me now?
Better, yes.
Yes. My question is, does he support reproductive rights for women, and does he support gay marriage for all Mainers?
Yes. Okay. I got the question. On my website, I address it more in depth and explain it in the best way I could. Okay. I'm pro-life. What that means, though, is that I think life begins at conception. But as a senator, I'm supposed to be upholding the Constitution and the laws that are legal under the Constitution. So I'm not going to try to undermine specifically by nitpicking all the different little laws that try to inhibit people from getting contraceptive needs and things like that.
Well, would you then work as a senator to overturn Roe v. Wade?
Well, Roe v. Wade actually isn't the determining case anymore. It's basically Planned Parenthood versus Casey. So I'll let the courts do their job.
Would you add to that question, would you work to overturn Planned Parenthood versus Casey then?
No, what I'm waiting for to happen is for the people of the United States to decide what they want, have the courts decide.
Did you? Did we get to the same-sex marriage question?
I believe in civil unions. I address that on my website, too. I think it's disingenuous on both sides to be arguing over this issue. I think on the one side, it's the sanctity of marriage, but the same people don't seem to be forcing the issue about divorces. I mean, what's the difference here when it comes to the sanctity of marriage? I think a divorce is undermine the sanctity of marriage also. But on the other hand, marriage is a definition, and civil unions can give the same rights and concerns that the gay community needs, then that's fine. I think basically if it was up to me, everyone would have a civil union and let the churches provide the marriages.
Is that something that should... Some activity there at
Somebody
the house.
Somebody agrees with me at the house.
is that a state's issue or issue for Congress?
Yeah, it's a state's issue. I believe it's a state's issue. I think Defense of Marriage Act, I think that was a misnomer, basically. I mean, not a misnomer, but it was something that should have been put in place.
Let's go to Portland and Bruce. Hi, Bruce.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, thank you.
My grandfather once said that the people at the top are never the bright ones. The ones that are getting in at the bottom, which yourself is, I think your ideas are unbelievable. But what always puzzles me, how does an individual go in and immediately make impact? I mean, do you have a plan? I mean, I know it's like sending one person to play the Patriots. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, yeah, I do understand what you're saying.
Overwhelming to you. I remember Tom Allen. You remember Tom Allen? He said, you don't know what Washington is like until you get there. And when you get into office, do you have a plan that you'll make an important step? Or
yeah, I understand your question. And here's what I got to say about it. Again, for one thing, I worked for all these different federal agencies. They all operate like Washington. They're controlled by Washington. If you look at where I worked and the different places I worked and the cases I was involved with, they're basically cases that weren't going to happen unless someone did something different, thought out of the box. And if you look at my resignation from the DEA, you'll see that the administrator wanted people to think out of the box. But guess what? They really don't want you to think out of the box. They don't even know where the box is. Okay. So what I got to say about it is this is an incremental process. I'm not going to say that I'm going to go to Washington and change everything. I'm saying to you that, again, it's not so much about winning, but making a difference here by making sure that we can hold accountable anybody that does go to Washington.
Right.
The issues I'm bringing up are issues that aren't being talked about. And so when somebody goes and says, I wish I would have known about that, well, guess what? You do know about it, so you better do something about it. Because if you don't do something about the security issues that I'm addressing, then I'm going to make sure that everybody knows about it. And then when it comes to people coming in at the bottom, you know, you always heard when you were a child, you know, cream rises to the top. But really, basically what's going on is, you know, crap floats. And the cream kind of pulls off to the side and does its own thing.
All right. Listen, we've got to take another short break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us.
Hi, I'm Suzanne Nance, the Director of Music and Cultural Content for MPBN. I've often heard from people that MPBN's cultural programs and the news and public affairs programming sustains them and connects them to their community and to the world. If you share this sentiment, perhaps you'd like to talk to my colleague, Adrian Pelletier, about the many ways you can support and sustain MPBN for future generations of listeners and viewers. Through MPBN's planned giving programs, there are many ways you can make a lasting impact on MPBN, such as making a gift through your will or estate, or through creating a charitable gift annuity with MPBN. For more information, call Adrian Pelletier at 907-7893. That's 907-7893. Or visit mpbn.net. You can make a difference. Thanks.
Join us this afternoon at 1 o'clock, immediately following Maine Calling, for Ideas from the CBC. Today's program focuses on the iceberg ship Habakkuk. In 1942, Hitler's U-boats ravaged merchant ships that Britain depended on for its survival. Enter a plan for a gigantic warship to help the Allies win the Battle of the Atlantic. It would be built in Canada and be built from ice. Ideas from the CBC this afternoon at 1 o'clock here on MPBN Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, a Your Vote 2012 conversation with Danny Dalton, independent candidate for Senate. Join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Email talk at mpbn.net. Post to our Facebook page or tweet at Maine Calling. Before the break, a caller was asking about, you know, if elected and went to Washington, what would be your plan? I want to follow up on that and ask you about what we're calling gridlock in Washington, the sort of the two parties facing off and the sense that they are not making much progress because they're too concerned about politics.
Yeah.
What would you do to fight that?
Well, I think part of the gridlock is because you have the two-party system, obviously, and you have two whips, okay? And the whips are there to make sure you follow party line. You have to be an independent in order to break the gridlock. So I think there's a lot of people in Washington that want to make changes, that have good ideas, but they're stymied by the two-party system. I don't care if how liberal you are or how conservative you are. Everyone knows we have to address the issue regarding tax reform, regarding the debt, regarding waste. When you can point out to them that I know this is going on, then they should be listening to you, okay? And so as a senator, when I show them that this is what I know about it, then they have to listen, or else you have to be jumping up and down, pointing out to your constituents that it's not happening. And that's one of the problems. This stuff gets hidden from the constituents, and they don't really know what's going on with regards to reform issues. When we're talking about the major powerful lobbyists controlling our parties, like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, putting so much money into this election here for the U.S. Senate, but they're undermining our immigration reform by trying to have more L-1 visas so that we can bring in tech workers at a lower cost to companies. You should be upset about that. When they undermine our health care reform, you should be upset about that. When pharma does the same thing, but and then gives money to these political parties, but on the other hand is doing something like paid to delay to these generic companies so that we can't have cheaper drugs on this pharmaceuticals, then everyone should know about it and be upset about it. I think you can work with people that actually want to make changes in Washington, but I think the two-party system stops them from doing it.
Citizens United, a landmark Supreme Court case that has really affected the campaign spending landscape, some would say to the worse. You've declined to accept campaign contributions.
Yeah, exactly. When I decided to run for United States Senate last summer, because I didn't think our representation was effective here regarding security concerns that I had and addressing the waste and mismanagement and all the different agencies I worked with, I walked around the state. I got all the signatures myself. I wanted to make sure that I talked to the people when I got the signatures, and that the two complaints they had was the two-party system is dysfunctional. They're not doing their job, and there's too much money in politics, and it's being controlled by major lobbyist groups. So I said, "Well, I'm not gonna take any donations." Matter of fact, right now I'm talking on your show, which I really appreciate, and I've only spent $2,500 on my campaign. I think if people understand why you're running, and I might have been a little naive thinking that the media would pick up on what I have to say, but I think it's still basically up to the constituents to find out what the candidates have to say.
Is it possible for a candidate to not accept any contributions, and as you did, spend $2,500 and win a major race like this?
I don't know. We'll find out. I mean, it's up to the it's up to the voters to demand that the issues are brought to everyone's attention, that they're addressed properly. If you go to my website and you compare it to the other websites and how I address the issues and what I'm talking about, I make it very clear how I feel about the issues and what I think can be done regarding those.
Would you support some kind of reform of the campaign spending laws?
Yep, we can reform it. We can continue reforming it like we have been doing for the last 100 years, and someone's going to find a way to get around it. Okay, so I think the way to really reform it is to make sure you vote for people who don't play the game.
Back to some foreign policy issues. What should the U.S. be doing now in Afghanistan? Is it doing what it should be doing?
Oh, it's so late. So late. They messed up so horribly when it comes to Afghanistan. First of all, they didn't put a big enough presence in Afghanistan. They let all the insurgents run into Pakistan, where they had a safe haven because the Taliban was basically built up by the ISI, and they still help support it. If I could, what I'm trying to do by letting some of the information out that I know about and it wasn't acted on is not to embarrass anyone, and it's not to undermine any of our efforts in trying to protect people like Sergeant Henderson from Maine, who was killed. What I'm trying to do is make everyone aware that how dysfunctional some of our agencies still are. And I can tell you that from day one, they mismanaged the Afghan war.
Okay, well, can you be more specific?
Well, like I said, by allowing the insurgents to go into Pakistan, okay, and then supporting Pakistan with billions of dollars of aid, but not demanding that we have them focus on insurgents and the Taliban, such as Mullah Omar, who is still alive. And how can that possibly be? You know, how can we be spending $80 billion on an intelligence community, you know, between a military and civilian, and take 10 years to find Osama bin Laden in the backyard of our partners? Are they really our partners? How come we aren't holding their feet to the fire? We shouldn't be the poppy growth in the heroin production in Afghanistan that is another big problem as far as funding goes for the Taliban. We're not providing enough aid to the tribal areas in Pakistan. I brought the tribal chiefs to meet with the State Department. They wanted $250,000 a year to help provide aid to their area, which has been taken over by the Taliban, to provide aid so that the Taliban couldn't pay the people that lived in that area $10 a day to help fight with the Taliban. And the USAID, the Pakistan desk officer, NAS couldn't come up with a plan to get these guys $250,000 to provide schools and medical stations, medical care stations within their communities. And that's was 200,000 Pakistanis in a tribal area.
Now, you've used the word dysfunctional here. I think on the website you've used incompetent to describe some federal agencies and the FBI and,
correct,
and these other agencies. What should the Senate be doing to change that?
Well, again, I mentioned in the beginning that the Senate's role, major role that they have, is to confirm responsible leadership to run these agencies. When they don't do that, then these agencies aren't going to be run properly. They're going to be incompetent. Then they're supposed to be providing proper oversight to these agencies to make sure they're running properly and that we're getting as much money, as much service from our tax dollars as possible. Now, take my case, for instance, with my background, and I go to you as my senator, and I'm trying to tell you we're not getting our money's worth, but you won't even meet with me. Is that providing proper oversight? No, it's not. Okay, so we're playing politics with a lot of different issues. When you got a DEA that's misallocating their resources, their manpower, your most important asset that any organization can have, and you know, Keith, working here at the station, is your manpower. Okay, if you misallocate your manpower, you're never going to get the job done. If you're going to send two agents to El Salvador when 74% of all the cocaine travels up through Central America, and you have two agents in Honduras and you have one supervisor in Nicaragua and five agents that don't know what they're doing in Guatemala, then how you expect to get the job done? And you're going to put nine, that's fine if that's all the manpower you have, but you're going to put 8 to 9 agents in Albany, New York?
So, but is it this, just to be clear, is it the Senate's job to manage that closely? I mean, you're talking about specifics.
No, that's not specifics. That's a whole agency. Okay, we're talking about running a whole agency. That's not a specific case. It's not specific to the guy sitting in the hospital bed. That's the whole agency. That's the group that's supposed to be running the counterterrorism for Afghanistan. It's these different agencies that continue. Department of Homeland Security, okay? I can tell you that they don't share the information properly. I'm the one that helped them in January of 2011 because it was overdue to help them write the draft for their SAR, which is their method of sharing terrorist information. I call up down here at the Fusion Center and try to tell them that there's a couple Taliban commanders, and I got their phone numbers from a source of information in 2010. And I say, here's the guy's, the source's phone number. Give him a call. He'll give you some more information. It's free of charge. And the guy never gets a call. I have to go up to the Department of Homeland Security, to ICE, and they have to coordinate the information.
We're almost out of time. I want to make sure we get your website in again. One last plug.
Yeah, daltonsenate.com. I appreciate it so much.
All right, Danny, thanks so much for being here today.
Take care.
Danny Dalton, running as an independent for U.S. Senate. In the coming weeks, we will be speaking with all of the candidates on the ballot for U.S. Senate and House of Representatives. Go to our Your Vote 2012 webpage. Those interviews will be archived on the MPBN website. And just click on the Your Vote 2012 banner. Today's program was produced by Jonathan Smith. Volunteer Lucas Randall Owens answered your calls. John Keimel ran the board, and we had help from the MPBN web team. Tomorrow on the program, a Your Vote 2012 interview with Democratic Senate candidate Cynthia Dill. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.